Welcome to Poverty Franchise Night in America. Welcome to the Sports Ethos Los Angeles Chargers podcast. Boy. Welcome to Sports Ethos LA Chargers podcast. The Chargers are not poverty, but tonight, Brandon, was this like the worst Monday night football night of our lives? With two of just some of the worst football you've ever seen?
I honestly did not think we could get anything worse than the football we've watched between last season and some of the games we've seen this year. And tonight, to have not just one, but two embarrassing, god-awful games is ridiculous. And to put literally like three out of the four worst franchises in football on primetime is garbage. That's good. The Raiders, Bears, and Falcons have no, like, Vikings, I understand, but because of their recent success, you know, all this stuff, but Falcons, Bears, Raiders have no business being on primetime at all. None.
Especially the Raiders.
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah. Who the Falcons almost lost to. Oh my God.
And I'm gonna I want to talk about that last drive too with the Raiders that just happened. We were just watching it. The Raiders completed a 4th and 8 on a backwards checkdown pass.
I don't understand.
Yeah.
Do you know how special that is? Like how rare that is, because that shouldn't happen. Like, that's a sign of a bad defense. When 4th and 8, the ball goes 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and you still convert it. You basically converted a 4th and 13, essentially, on a check down to the running back. I can't. I have no words.
That's no sign of bad offensive play calling.
Oh yeah. I mean,
it's a play that looks poorly on both of them.
we've called it the Poverty Bowl for a reason. That these were two. I mean, and listen, if you're, you know, it's one thing when a bad team is playing even a somewhat good team, and they give them a good fight, good energy, you know, like what the Panthers did to Philly. But the Raiders are none of those things. The Raiders are not the Panthers. The Raiders are terrible. They're like the Falcons. This is like what? The 4th, 5th game they've played this year, where they've played down to some of the worst competition in football. And then, you know, they're a 500 football team. It's like, yep, that's exactly what we thought they would be, if not less. Actually, they might not. I got to see what the rest of their schedule is. But I pray to God they don't win another game, because they are so incompetent between their head coaching, their quarterback play, and just the inconsistent, and just their awful defense, that at this point, I don't want to see them make a wild card. I don't think they will at this point, but because what? The NFC North is sending two more teams on top of the division winner into the playoffs.
Yep.
Probably.
Yep.
So
for sure. Yeah.
And probably Washington at the 7.
Thank God.
Yep.
Thank God. Please.
Yeah.
Here with me, including Brandon, to talk about poverty, at least for 5 minutes or 5 more minutes than this, because I literally only have one other thing to talk about tonight. is Shane and Will. How are you guys doing today? My apologies for the disgraceful Seahawks loss.
Why are you sorry?
Dang, why you gotta remind me that? Why you gotta remind me that, man?
Because that game was horrible.
I'll be honest, it went about how I expected. I mean, you know, I don't know if 30-13 would have been my score prediction, but... Yeah, I mean, you look at the Seahawks defensively. Their biggest weakness is their ability to defend the run. And Green Bay, they're one of the top three rushing teams in the league. So, you know, it's like, what do we think they're going to do? In the opening drive, I don't even think they threw a single pass on the opening drive. And, you know, they went like 6 minutes and scored a touchdown. So right from that drive alone, I was like, yeah, this is not gonna go well. Because it's just, it, you know, it sets the tone early. Yeah. And they were just, Seattle was playing catch up the whole time and just wasn't quite enough.
Before we continue on with the Monday night terribleness, Shane, what other things stood out for you on Sunday?
on Sunday. Well, you know, when they've got all the right, not even the right guy, when they're healthy, I think Tampa is a lot better than we probably think. You know, I that was one thing that stood out to me. They had a bit of a rough stretch in the middle there, but, you know, they were missing both receivers, a bunch of the guys in the secondary. They're starting to get healthy now. And, you know, we've obviously talked about this many times before, but Mike Evans, very underrated receiver, probably the most underrated in my lifetime. And he's still a dog. But, you know, the thing that Tampa has this year that they haven't had the last few years is a really good running game. you know, so that's a huge bonus for them, because, you know, it takes a little pressure off Baker and the rest of the offense. So, yeah, and then it gives their aging defense a bit more of a break because they're on the bench more. So that was one thing I took away. Let's see what else. I mean, it seems like now the playoffs are pretty much set. It's just a matter of what the order is going to be. You know, at this point, looking at the rest of the schedule, I think the Rams win the NFC West. I think Tampa wins the South. And then 5, 6, 7 is probably Minnesota, Green Bay, Washington. And then in the AFC, I guess really the only question mark for me right now is who wins the AFC North. But otherwise, you know, it's looks like, you know, it'll be Kansas City, Buffalo. 3 will be, you know, Baltimore or Pittsburgh. Then Houston. And then 5, 6, 7 is going to be the second place team of the North, so Pittsburgh or Baltimore, and then Denver, and then LA, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much.
So more or less, that'll kind of be it. Yeah, and then teams like Atlanta, Seattle, you know, Cincy, Arizona, they'll probably just, like, be, you know, just on the outside looking in. But, you know, sucks for them. so, yeah, that's... Yeah. That was my biggest takeaway, is Tampa. You know, it's just as they get healthy, they're not a first round exit by any means. They're definitely a team that could make some noise. So, at least I think.
Yeah, interesting. Will, what are your kind of big takeaways from yesterday?
I say the biggest ones from yesterday is that, in my opinion, I think the Bills right now possibly are going to be the team to beat, though they're not going to get the number one seed. It could change because Mahomes is going to be down week to week, but we'll see how that gun turns up. But if they get the one seed or not get the one seed, I think the Buffalo Bills are going to be the team to beat in the AFC. And I think that basically with Josh Allen, arguably right now the best quarterback, playing the best ball right now, and he's not turning the ball over, and he's playing great football. And yesterday was arguably the best day. The Bills took down the Lions, which was the highlight for me yesterday. And honestly, it was a great feeling. And all they have to do, especially for the Bills, is just, you know, grind it out and just get these wins and just hope the Chiefs get some losses and possibly the Bills get the first seed or whatever it is. But I think that was the biggest thing. And it also looks like the Eagles could possibly get that first seed if the Lions screw up either with the Bears, but I think that league with that, but I think possibly with Minnesota. So I think Eagles could possibly get the first seed, and I think Vikings could possibly get the first spot in the NFC North, possibly, because the Lions are vulnerable right now. And right now, it's basically those late games are arguably the best time, especially as far as quality with football. But yeah, those are my thoughts.
Yeah, those late window and a lot of the primetime games are going to be good moving forward. Okay, I only have one thing for Monday Night Football. One. That's all I have. We're doing quarterback corner. Shane, Kirk Cousins looks scared to throw the football. Yes, but Kirk Cousins literally looks scared to throw the football, Shane. He literally looks so scared, so worried of throwing a pick, and then inevitably he throws one. It's a tough situation.
It's because he's got number 9 breathing down his neck, wanting to go in, and he knows it. So, you know, in Kirk's mind, it's like, I can't mess this up, or they're going to put this guy in. Because he knows that, you know, Raheem Morris being a defensive-minded coach, he's going to, you know, not all, but most defensive-minded coaches have this pattern or this tendency where they, you know, where if their quarterback has a lot of turnovers, they kind of freak out and, you know, move on from him. So I'm sure that's in the back of his mind. And, you know, so, yeah, I think that's probably part of it. Or a big part of it. So, you know, we'll see. Let's just say this. I don't see Kirk remaining the starter for much longer. I mean, you know, maybe they'll play him out the rest of the season, but I don't know if he's the guy next year. I mean, we'll see. It's a little tricky with his contract, but yeah. So, very, very strange. Really quick, you know, fall from grace for him. I knew he wouldn't be as good this year, but God, I didn't think it was going to look like this. I don't know. Tough times if you're a Falcons fan.
Yeah. Will, we've talked about Kirk Cousins with you for a while. You're hitting the done button, right? Like you're done with this.
Yeah. I think Cousins, he's been always that quarterback, you know, that always going to find a way to get the bag any way he can. He done this with the Vikings. About I think Vikings twice, and I done this, and now he's done with the Falcons. So, you know, he's always been a steady, okay quarterback at times in regular season. But we already know, man, because Kirk Cousins, where after that injury that he had previously, he's gonna be a statue, and you know that he's not gonna be that quarterback that we thought he's gonna be because there was a lot of hype. He was pretty good in the early parts of the season, despite that. Despite that first game out, but since then he's been like okay, and then he like really fell off as he's getting to mid to late season. So honestly, it's basically the old Kirk Cousins, especially in prime time. And I agree with Shane. He's getting afraid because he knows if he keeps screwing up, that guy named Penix Jr., the guy that took Washington to the championship. I mean. Against Michigan is coming for that spot, and
the big Penix energy.
Yep. And despite and despite them keep on saying reports like, oh, we're going to stick with Kirk Cousins, we're going to stick with Kirk Cousins. Honestly, we could think they could say that one way, but they could do something else. So these could change. But yeah, I think Kirk Cousins, possibly, they might as well probably just bench him and stuff like that. I think probably next season, but I highly doubt it because I'm not sure how much they trust they have in Penix, but we'll see how Penix picks do next time, you know, preseason hits or maybe during the probably last game of the season this season possibly. But yeah, but we'll see what happens there. But yeah, Kirk Cousins, possibly his time as a starter's QB could be numbered depending on what the front office is going to do.
All right, Brandon, finish this off before we go to post credits. The shortest thing we've ever done in this podcast, with two Monday night games, but finish this off.
Kirk Cousins. I like your cousin, Jake Cousins, but that's about it. Yeah, I mean, what?
This Kirk is Cousins' cousin.
Yeah. This is his first touchdown pass in 5 weeks. Tonight, he only threw one of them. Like, do you know how insanely bad you have to be to only pass for 112 yards, only one TD, and still throw a pick against the Raiders? Do you know how bad you have to play, like, for that to happen? Kirk Cousins might even be dropping out of his own tier at this point.
I said that last week, yeah.
Yeah.
We're
because
all saying
I,
it at this point.
Like, it's ridiculous. This is just so beyond ridiculous. And it's crazy. But Atlanta has just as bad of a contract wrapped up in Kirk Cousins as the Browns do in Deshaun Watson. So
no, it's not that bad.
Oh my god! Well, I think it is, especially
the
when you
draft one. Is that's like really bad.
Yeah, I mean they could still, they're gonna have to buy out both quarterbacks initially. Like
no, yeah,
that's what I'm getting at. They're gonna have to buy them both out. They neither of those guys can be here next year. Period. There's no way in hell. I don't care how much money. If you can afford to pay a guy that much money, you can afford to eat the money on him. You make a ton of money. You know, it's eating the money on one guy is not going to kill your franchise. I mean, it will, but it's not going to kill you like in the long run. You'll rebound. Your team's already crap anyway. So, you know, it's not, you can't get the Browns can't get any lower than what they are. And the Falcons failed miserably this year. So, I don't really, you know, at this point, just, you know, like, Kurt, this is what we told people right before the season. Not even right before. This is what we told people in training camp. Kirk Cousins isn't going to do nothing with this team because Kirk Cousins is what he is. He's a 500 quarterback. He can win you games, but he'll also lose you a lot of games. That's exactly what he is. You know, the numbers, you know, the stats. You know, say, oh, you know, he doesn't look that bad. It's like, yeah, but numbers only tell half a story. Watch the games because he'll throw.
I think they only tell like 10% of the story.
Oh yeah,
you guys know me. I hate stats.
Yeah, he'll throw three touchdowns in a game. Like they're like, oh yeah, Kirk Cousins threw for 400 yards, four TDs. It's like, yeah, but you're forgetting the part where he threw three interceptions and that's why they only won by 2 points. And the next week they lose and they get blown out by like 14 because then he doesn't throw a touchdown, doesn't have the yards, and still throws the interceptions. So, like, I'm so done because I know that there's still people out there because I've even seen it that say that Kirk Cousins is a good quarterback. I'm like, Kirk Cousins is, I don't know what you're smoking, but he's not a good quarterback. He's never going to win anything. And I don't understand how he can keep basically being a professional bank robber in his career. How these GMs keep giving him money. Why?
And an exorbitant amount to be their starter.
Like, it, like, my God, man, it doesn't make sense. None of, like literally, they're showing that there's a ticker on ESPN right now that says Kirk Cousins breaks TD drought. You would think he threw three touchdowns in a damn game. He threw one against the Raiders. Really? That's what we're going to talk about? Is that how down bad we are for content on ESPN? That's what we're talking about? His one touchdown pass against the Raiders. Really? Like, Jesus. Come on, man.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, a professional football player throws a touchdown in five games. Amazing.
This is great. Can we also do another ESPN ticker headline really quick? The Raiders haven't won a game since week four of the NFL season.
That's really sad.
Oh, man. Oh,
well,
God.
Well, Brandon, your Eagles have won 10 times straight. 10 straight times. Yeah. Okay, that's
to put that in perspective, the Yankees have won probably like 10 games since then, and they haven't played in 2 months. So
yeah. And another thing, the Rangers have won a game sooner than the Giants have at MetLife. So there you go. There's that.
Oh my God. And yet people magically think that a quarterback will save these franchises. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Baseball or hockey?
Rangers? Hockey. Rangers. Mm. Oh my God.
Either way, it's sad.
It's sad.
Yeah.
Let's go to something more happy. So last week, we randomly started doing, well, I know you weren't here for this, but we randomly started looking at Brandon's college courses. For some weird reason, because we were talking about college football and all these different things. So I sent in the chat my college courses. I don't think there's anything that's like funny, though, with my course load. Like, I'm going to be honest. I looked through it. I'm like, there's nothing here that looks that interesting. Brandon, have you seen anything that you're just like, that's worth laughing about? Because I'll be honest, I haven't seen anything. I looked through the whole thing, and I was like, there's nothing here.
Yeah, and honestly, well, see, you got a bigger campus, bigger school, all these different things, and it's also, you know, it's more in the public eye, and all these different things. So, I would figure that your school would actually make sense in terms of courses, in terms of getting students where they need to be, instead of, you know, my college, where you can basically damn near major in scuba diving.
That's not a joke. That's not a joke. You can literally major in scuba diving pretty much.
It's not a major, but you know what I mean. Like, you know, you can actually, yeah. Like, it's like, my God, like, you're gonna waste time at college for that. That's what you're doing.
Right.
It's like that's actually crazy. But I don't know. Like, what you've got there seems straightforward. I'm looking through it. I've looked through it. I don't see anything where I'm like, it's out of the ordinary, you know, where it's just unorthodox. I haven't seen it. So, I want to find something to laugh at, but I'm like,
there's nothing.
Mine, I don't think you're going to get a much funnier curriculum than what I had, or, you know, or classes that I know that we had at Seton Hall. So, I mean, hey, if we can find, you know, I want to find, that should be a thing on the show, since we are still technically college age, like, where we just find, like, the most random, like, remember how we were doing the whole thing where we were, like, looking at, like, these D3 colleges that were getting spanked by, yeah, like, D1 schools, and we were like, oh, yeah, let's look at what they do. It's like, I actually want to look at their courses and see how dumb it is.
Yeah, do some research on that and get back to me, because I think, or I'll do some as well, and we can tally them up and figure it out for the show. I know, Shane, I know you did a lot of, like, you know, film-based schooling. Will, what about you? Any funny, like, college courses that you took or that other people took in your college experience? Is there anything noteworthy for you?
I have to say, it will probably be the It'll probably be the acting for non-majors. That was pretty funny. I think there was the those science classes were, and those cinema classes where almost everyone fell asleep when they have a video up because it was like night classes. Those always suck.
Yeah.
And I think that's about it. The only thing I can remember. Those were the ones that stand out though.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. All right. We are doing Downfall for our movie. Will, I don't know if you saw it. Did you see it?
I'll head out though. I guess y'all can talk about it though.
Before you go, I do want to ask you, what are some of your favorite like? I think we did something similar, but what are your favorite like war movies? Like, do you watch a lot of war or a lot of like war drama based films or anything that come to the top of your head?
Oh, is it like something that's like involved war that has like war in it?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of them. I remember the first Wonder Woman movie. I remember that one.
That had some war elements in it. Yeah, World War One in there?
When Wonder Woman was part of it. Yeah. There was the X-Men origin Wolverine. I remember I saw bits of that. There was some war stuff in it because Wolverine used to be part of the war. I think there was I know there was some other ones I can remember as far as, I think there was some, I have some memory of it. Captain America. I remember that one.
Yeah.
That was based off war.
I love that you're basing a lot of it on superheroes because it takes a lot of inspiration from real world events into the comic book. So I think in retrospect, in the movies too. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of them. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Will, for...
For sure.
Well, thanks, Will, for having us, bringing us some entertainment during these bad games, dude. We'll We'll see you next week on the show.
All right, see you guys.
See ya.
See ya.
You will.
All right.
Did you say ooh woo?
No, I said see you will.
Oh god.
Ooh, I'm not like that.
Ooh woo is how I feel about these games. Ooh woo, garbage, trash. okay, wait. Before we start, actually, where do you rank these two games in terms of worst games of the year? Because to me, this is number one, just because there was two bad ones simultaneously at one time. Like, I kind of want to group them together.
I think this is the worst primetime slate of the year. That's a fact, I think. But I think... if I had to rank it... I mean, this has got to be... I mean, in terms of, like, games... Like, I mean, these are still... They have something at least exciting. Well, the Bears-Vikings game, that game was awful. But at least the Falcons Raiders game kind of had a little bit of excitement at the end. Like the other bad games we've had this year basically just were trash all the way through. But this one is probably in the top, especially the Falcons Raiders one. That's in the top three. That game was horrific. But yeah, Vikings Bears has no business being on primetime. And I'm surprised that, you know, they didn't flex that game out weeks ago.
They can't. They can't flex doubles. They're not allowed to.
That's so dumb. Why? They gotta change that. That's dumb. That makes no sense. Flex it out. They should be able to flex out whatever the hell they want to, because that nobody in their right mind wants to watch a game like this. But yeah, I don't get it anymore with putting bad games on TV and then not being able to move them. I mean, some people, to be honest, you should be able to, but you know, that's a story for another day.
Yeah.
And for another season. But yeah, I think overall with these two games, I think if I had to combine them, it's probably top five for the worst games of the year. But I think the Falcons Raiders one, I think that's easily top three. And I don't think that's moving. That's easily top three.
Yeah. Also, before we actually start the movie, I did want to mention this would be the perfect day for us to send our thoughts and prayers to Randy Moss, who I know went through cancer treatment and is a cancer survivor. Congrats for that. Really tough sight to see him on a cane, honestly, over the last few days. But much love from the show to Randy Moss. Our thoughts and prayers are with him because that was a crazy thing. And I love that.
Yeah.
I love that everyone's kind of rallying around the less Moss cancer thing. So keep that going. That stuff's awesome.
Yeah, that was, and it's weird that, well, not weird. I appreciate that they, you know, kind of kept it private, but you know, it was kind of recently when we heard about it. It's just like, whoa, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. All he said was, "I'm just going through a health issue." And then, and then it kind of happened pretty quick.
It got really bizarre, though. It got really bizarre because then Larry Fitzgerald's dad was like, "Oh, yeah, he's got, you know, cancer." And then his son came out and basically bashed him and said, "No, he doesn't. You don't know what you're talking about." I'm like, and then it came out later the next morning that he actually does have cancer. Like, so I don't know what that was all about.
Yeah, that was weird.
That interaction was just strange. I don't get that at all. I don't know. That was weird to me. I'm still trying to wrap my head around that one, but that doesn't matter. It's all about Randy Moss.
Yeah. So I figured it was good that we saved it for today, since obviously they did the tribute before the Vikings game and obviously even during the game too with Justin Jefferson. Let's get to Downfall, Shane. This movie was a difficult, but I think really important watch. So go ahead.
Yes. Yes to both of those. Yes, a little context for the viewers if you don't know. This is a movie. This is a movie about, well, on the surface, it's about Hitler in the final days, in his final days in the bunker. But on a deeper level, it's really a story. There's no other movie, at least that I've seen, that I don't want to say humanizes him. Well, yes.
I think that humanizes, but it doesn't. I think that's exactly correct.
But not sympathizes. You know.
Yeah. Like
no point do you feel sorry for him or like, oh yeah, I get it. It's like,
yeah.
No.
I want you to repeat that because I think that's super important. It humanizes him, but it doesn't sympathize with him. That's so important because I think that's what makes this movie so good.
Yeah, because I think what this movie showed is ultimately, I think it was important to see the whole person with him because it shows that he's not just an evil dictator, but it shows that evil dictators are humans, therefore, you know, anybody who is seemingly normal or whatever can be capable of something like that. I mean, right in, you know, the opening scene when he's interviewing some girls to be his secretary, the very first thing is one of his you know, assistants or whatever, he says he'll be out shortly, he's just feeding his dog. And you know, it seems like such a simple thing, but it's like, oh yeah, just like, you know, just like any average person would do. And then he comes out, and he's very nice to all the girls, and they, you know, they're all proper when addressing him. He's like, no, don't, you're fine. You know, it just, things where it's like, when you think of an evil dictator, you'd be like, oh, they wouldn't do that, you know, or they wouldn't act that way. And then, you know, they go into his office, and he, like, his dog's sitting there looking all cute, and he kisses it on the head. And I was like, oh, that's sweet. And then I went, wait. I was like, hold up. Wait a minute. Yeah. But again, it doesn't ever, at no point in the movie are you ever like, oh, you know, we just misunderstood him, or, you know, it's like, no, it makes it very clear that he was a piece of, you know what, but it shows the whole person, what he was like behind closed doors, you know, and I think the actor portrayal of him was incredible. Bruno Gotz was his name. He's a Swiss actor. He actually passed away about 5-6 years ago, sadly. But yeah, he, you know, it's pretty well documented that in his final days, Mustache Man had he had like this uncontrollable shake in his left hand, because he just was on this like crazy combination of alcohol and narcotics and whatever else. Cause I mean, he was losing the war, so he was going crazy. And so, you know, I just think it's, you know, it's like one of those subtle details where he always hides the left hand behind his back, and it's always just shaking. And people kind of, like, as he passes, they kind of look at it like, whoa, is this dude all right? You know, just, you know, little details like that. But I think, overall, I think what this movie does so well is showing the war from Germany's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, every piece of media we have is, you know, definitely like pro-ally forces. So, you know, US, UK, Britain, so on and so forth. UK and Britain are the same. US, UK, and France. And, you know, all the other allies. Anyways. But, you know, even though, you know, the Nazis were obviously on the wrong side of the war, only about a third of Germans actually supported the Nazis. The other, you know, two-thirds of the country, they were like, yeah, why are we doing this, you know? and you see that in this movie, you know. It's pretty 50-50 as far as, like, people that are going, that are just totally brainwashed, like, oh, yes, whatever you say, you know, and that's what we'll do. And they just totally kiss his ass, and, you know. And then those people, and then there's the ones that follow along with what he says, not because they think he's right, but because they're like worried that they'll be killed or something. And you can really see you can see the fear and just kind of feel how tense it is whenever he's around. You can just kind of see everybody's like, they just get stiff, and then there's the other people that are like, yeah, I screw this guy, you know. And I think one of the most powerful scenes in the movie was when one of his top generals told him, yeah, I disobeyed many of your orders, and you know, it was nothing personal, I just didn't agree. And then And then Hitler, like, actually sheds a tear. And I was not expecting something like that. But it's just like, oh, wow, like, that actually, like, hurt him. you know, it wasn't just, like, a shot to his ego, but he was like, man, I thought this guy was, like, tight with me. Or, you know. So anyways, I could go on, and I probably will in a little bit, but I want to hear your guys' thoughts first.
Yeah, I also have a lot to say, but Brandon, please go ahead, because I would like to hear your opinion as well, so go ahead.
Yeah, I feel like when I was watching this, and I kind of broke it up into pieces because it was longer, so
yeah, you know, it is.
So before I went in to work today, I basically broke it up into, not really in half, I basically split it where I got as much done as possible before I kind of just like, all right, that's enough for now. I'm like, I actually need to like start kind of getting ready. And then when I got home, I finished the rest of it. So I basically broke it up into like the first like about 2 hours, and then I finished the last half hour when I got home. And my God, the last half hour takes forever because it's like Jesus, like Hitler and his wife kill themselves well before like the last like 20 minutes.
It's about 30 minutes before the credits.
Yeah. But, you know, but also that's a good thing too, because it also shows you, you know, what it was like once the leader, you know, a leader falls, like any leader, whether that's Mussolini, like, you know, or Stalin or any of them.
And I want to touch more on this in a second, so don't let me forget.
Yeah. But, when it came to this, it felt like when I was watching it, it was like that to me, it's less about kind of, you know, Hitler's last days as it was about just the, well, obviously it's about the fall of Nazi Germany, but it's also the it tells more about the lives of the people around him than it does about him. So it's, you know, they're all there for different reasons, different circumstances. They all have different motives. You know, some are brainwashed, like you were saying, Chance. Some are brainwashed by him. Some weren't. Some acted like they were, but really weren't. Especially the main actress, the main secretary. So, you know, there's a lot between really all the characters in this movie and all their different reasons for why they do what they do. Honestly, to me, the most, because it does happen in movies, but just to see that this actually was something, I mean, I'm pretty sure it did happen, with the killing of the kids.
Oh my god.
This is widely regarded by World War II historians as the most historically accurate movie about that war.
I remember you saying
if something out. If something happened in this movie, it probably happened in real life to some degree.
Yeah, so that's I like seeing that. I was like, yep, that doesn't surprise me that they were that kind of brainwashed that they believed in not like killing themselves, but killing anybody even close to Hitler once Hitler died. So, you know, or was going to kill himself. So it's awful to see something like that, but it's also, that's how messed up in the head Nazi Germany was back then. And we say back then as like, you know, people, you know, we don't realize that, you know, when it comes to world history, that's not that long ago. Which is crazy.
And by
people
and by the
still
way,
alive from that time.
And by the way, let's just put this in some sort of creative context. This kind of dictatorship stuff still happens in our world. Like it mm-hmm. does. Like it does in yeah. so many different
North
places.
Korea.
North Korea being the yeah. apt example, but continue.
That's
Brandon.
The area. Yeah, Russia even.
Yeah. Yeah, but continue, Brandon.
Yeah, but when I watch something like this, it's like, I didn't find it to be a hard watch. I found it to be straightforward. I mean, I didn't kind of know the connections to the connections between the characters and Hitler kind of got confusing as time went on. So I was like, that kind of crossed me up a little bit, but I was like, I understand where it's leading or what it's leading towards. So I was like, okay, I'm not too worried about that. But it definitely is something where it's like, I can definitely see why, you know, this movie has such significance. I mean, it's a shame, like Shane said, like when I first saw, Hitler in this movie, you know, Bruno Gantz's character, I was like, oh yeah, this is from the meme that everyone knows. I was like, oh, that's where I know it from. But, you know, obviously all the different things that, you know, he's freaking out about, you know, his military crumbling in the war. That's where I was like, yeah, I remember this scene. And I was like, yeah, I've seen the YouTube, the old, like, 15-year-old YouTube videos of, like, making fun of this scene. But other than that, like, you know, if you can, and then the thing is, honestly, by the end of the movie, I'd forgotten all about that. Like, that's why I said when I first started watching the movie, because it happened fairly early enough in the movie. And I was like, oh, yeah, I know that. And then honestly, by about 10, 15 minutes later, I just forgot all about it. Because that's how good of a movie it was at portraying just how dark a time that was in world history, especially for the people involved. But I definitely do think that it was worth the watch. It really is. Especially not even just if you're like a big history buff, but just if you're really a fan of, you know, kind of just true movies, like, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Not nonfiction, but like, you know, almost in a sense, like this is the closest you're going to get in terms of like I don't know if this is going to make sense if I say it, a fictional, like, documentary.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah.
Like that's what you're going to, that like, this is the closest to a documentary you're going to get without it actually being a documentary. Because the documentaries that they have done about this time, just, they do, you know, there's only so much you can cover, and they do leave out certain things. Like, this felt like, you know, yeah, it skipped around a little bit, but it covered all the main things that you really need to know about this time and this time in history. So, you know, and obviously it's got the facts at the end of just how many people had died in during this time, what happened to obviously the Jews at this time. And things like that. And it's an important movie to watch, but I think if I had to rate it, based on just what I really thought, I was going to give it kind of like a meh kind of score, because I'm like, yeah, it's not my kind of movie. But I actually found myself kind of just enjoying it. And I mean, the acting is very spot on, very emotional, very tense, which is exactly what it was at that time, too. So it's so accurate to really what happened, that I think if I had to rate it, I mean, like, I'm not going to go super high, but because it's not my kind of thing, but it definitely is a really cool and really good movie. So, and I think that it's important to tell a story like this and to tell it accurately, because no other really story about this has done that yet. Or really, I should say, even since, because it's already 20 years, I think, since that movie came out.
Yeah, just about.
So I think if I had to rate it, I would probably say that it's, I'd probably say I'd give like a 7 out of 10. I think that's fine.
You're going to hate my rating, yeah. Then.
Okay. My Lord.
And mine.
Yeah, you're going to hate it. Okay, so first off, this is in German. This whole movie is Germany being, yes, like, hey, we fucking did this, and we're just going to embrace it to tell a really smart, really heartbreaking, really hard story, which I loved, and they did it in so many different ways. So my biggest question when I was in middle school, more particularly high school history, was just how did people get so brainwashed into this guy's bullshit, really, right? That was always my question. This movie answered it for me. This sounds so bad, but I get it. I got it. I got it immediately. I was like, okay. Because he was kind to the people around him to a degree until they backstab him. He was a like,
yeah, until you screwed him over.
Yeah. like he genuinely was, again, as we talk about, like a human being. And this is something that people need to understand is like, yeah, these people are awful people, but they're human beings in general. This movie to me is also a movie entirely about stress. Do you see how many of the characters go through the war is over, we have hope, the war is over, we have hope, the war is over, oh, let's get drunk because the war is fucking over and we're dead. It's just this constant swing. And
right.
Hitler's wife is the most agonizing character in this movie for a reason. She is so insanely agonizing because she is just so amazing. It's a stress response. And I know this because I've gone through a lot of really stressful times in life. What she's doing is a massive coping mechanism, which is being the most wishy-washy, yeah, most happy in one moment. And, oh, you need to fucking leave. Here's a coat. Please get the fuck out of here. Situation. And it's almost kind of amazing that she even married Hitler in the end, but she kind of did because of her kind of brainwashing. But the death of the dog, and in particular the death of the kid.
Yes, that's the scene.
The dog.
Yeah. The kids, yeah, but the dog, oh.
Okay. So
was worse.
They're both, huh? Go ahead, Brandon. What were you saying?
No, I was gonna say, are we really gonna pick which one was worse?
Yes, the dog next. No.
Oh god. Oh no.
No, they both are, but yeah.
See, I knew the dog. I remember because wasn't that like true that the dog, like in real life, he had a dog and it went with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had
a few throughout his life, but yeah.
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 I'm getting really loud because this is the same movie. So the dog thing I kind of got because it was like, okay, we need to hide our bodies. We cannot have, you know, whatever. But the kids, man, was such a... I got it. Like, I understood where she was coming from, the mother. But I was also like, shit. Like, watching it, oh my god, it fucking ruined me. But like, dude, so like, here's the thing that strikes me the most about this movie and about real life dictatorships and stuff. You are so brainwashed that you think that this person not living and Nazi Germany not being a thing means the world is gonna end. Literally, that's what they thought. They thought the world was going to end and crumble around them. So they didn't want their kids to live in a world that was not Nazi Germany because they thought the world was going to die around them. That's just such an incredibly heartbreaking and awful thought. But I got it, but I understood it. But I also understood it in the most heartbreaking, awful, and most like confusing way, if that makes sense. Where I was just like, wow, we're going to that extreme. And I'm sure that mother wasn't the only quote unquote, I guess, leader of the family, if you will, that felt that way at the time. You know what I mean? So it's absolutely crazy.
Like I said, about a third of the country.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's
really believed in it.
Yeah. That's crazy. But I mean, so I thought about that a lot. There's so much. I was going to pick like a scene that Bruno Gantz, the Hitler character, did and like read it out, but I could never do it justice because the scene where he's angry, the scenes where he's sad, like I remember rewinding this movie so much because I was like, wow, that is some just picturesque acting. Like it's unbelievable in so many different ways. But like those are the things that this movie, and I felt so bad for the secretary the entire time. Like I love how they viewed her or how they used her as like an emotional grip for you to latch onto right from the beginning. And if you latch on to her character throughout the entire movie, it's really beautiful in terms of just, I mean, she gets out in the end, but like, it's a really beautiful character. It's beautifully well scripted. It's beautifully well acted. And then I think at the end of the movie, that's her as an adult, as an old woman, talking in the end, as she was in the beginning, which again, so she was the emotional core of the film, that's actually her, which I think is pretty remarkable. Always my thing with movies is this a movie that's going to stick with me for a long time? I said that about A Quiet Place. That movie still sticks with me. I gave that a 10. I gave that a masterpiece rating. I'm going to do that for every category that we have in the history of the show. This gets a 10. This gets a masterpiece. This gets a masterpiece for me. This gets a 10. This gets a 10. And look, there are certain problems with the characters and how those things flow, sure. But I'm never going to stop not thinking about this movie, because this movie, as weird as it sounds, answered so many of my questions about why do people latch on to dictators? And I was like, I got it. As awful as it is, I got it. And I'm never going to stop thinking about the fact that for some reason I figured it out. I'm literally never going to stop thinking about how awful and weirdly just how, I guess beautiful isn't even the right word, but it also feels that way. It's so awful, yet so beautiful at the same time, in the sense that it's war is like that. War is so awful, but yet there are moments of peace in it. Like when they're looking up at the statue and having a cigarette, you know what I mean? Like it's absolutely crazy to me that's a thought, but it really is. So,
because it unites people in a common way.
Yeah. It's really, it's
in a
really
weird
crazy.
Way.
In a weird way, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Definitely. So yeah, it has a 10. And look, there are significant problems, but like, oh my god, I'm never going to stop thinking about this movie. I have to figure out where this sits in my top 5 all time, because it's going to sit in there for a long while. Because it was so unexpected. And for me to have those roller coaster of emotions in that way, I'm never going to get over it. It's going to take me a very long time. And I'm hopeful that, you know, like when we have kids and are learning about the history of Adolf Hitler, that eventually they watch this. Because honestly, the fact that I didn't watch this while I was in school learning about like Hitler and World War II is really disgraceful. It honestly is. Because,
yeah, that's,
it's unbelievable.
That's something I was going to say too. This movie should be shown in history classes in the United States and in Europe, like
everywhere. It should be shown everywhere.
Yeah
in schools, 100%. So the fact that I didn't watch this in school and watched a movie about Tom Cruise trying to kill Hitler instead, I think that's a little bit of a problem.
Poor Inglourious Bastards.
Yeah,
gonna be killing Nazis.
What is that Tom Cruise movie about him trying to kill Hitler called? I literally forgot what it's called.
Valkyrie.
Yeah,
I couldn't remember either.
Seriously, the fact that I watched Valkyrie over this is kind of disgraceful. Like, it honestly is. Yes, Brandon?
Yeah, no, this...
No, because I was like... Shane, do you want to get to your point about Stalin and Mussolini and that?
Yeah, what was I going to say about it?
You were just talking about how it kind of relates to dictators, and obviously Hitler in this movie does mention Stalin as well, and saying, I should have killed the people. I should have killed all these military leaders like Stalin, and just like that also really stuck out with me. But
yeah.
But go ahead.
This movie, it's an A for me. I think it's incredible. I was blown. I told you guys when I first saw it, I think it was like this summer, maybe, I was just blown away by it. And I liked it even more the second time. You know, it's, I mean, I said my big piece, but, you know, as far as like the dictatorship aspect of it, you know, the, I mean, the reason, and this isn't, this part isn't totally explored in the movie, but, you know, the reason people initially started to believe in Hitler is because, you know, after World War One, the Treaty of Versailles was signed amongst, you know, the European countries. And as a result, Germany was having to pay a lot of reparations to other countries, as well as, you know, rebuilding their own country, which is obviously very costly. And so, you know, by the late 20s, early 30s, Germany's economy was in rough, rough shape. I mean, it was bad. You know, and the citizens were understandably frustrated and worried, and, you know, and so then this guy came along and, you know, he had all these kind of radical ideas, but they were like, hey, we need something. We need something like that. So
we need something to latch. We need something to latch on to, basically, as a political right. community. Yeah.
Because when he gave speeches, he, you know, he was very passionate. He was, you know, and he really, well, at least he acted like he really cared. Who knows if he really did. But, you know, but he was also, like, when you would talk to him, he was very quiet and soft-spoken and very, you know, like you saw in the movie. I mean, you know, like the interaction he had with the kids, it's like, oh, I wish my generals were as brave as you, you know. Like, imagine as a kid being told that by your country's leader. Like, that would make you feel so badass. You know, so that's like, but then again, comment like that is also kind of a shot at his guys. Like, yeah, because my guys suck. You know, that, like, that's kind of the ego that this guy had. Anyways, that's besides the point. The point, so, you know, that's why people were drawn to him. And I think what this movie explores really well is the dangers of that, of how a man can, you know, kind of brainwash all these people, and the dangers of a country putting all their faith into one guy. Because what happens when that guy dies and you have no succession plan? That's what happened in Germany. And I'm glad that they, you know, the last half hour without, you know, after Hitler dies, it was definitely slower, not as quite as engaging, but I think it was really important to show that, because it's like Brandon said, it's like, okay, well, he's gone, now what? And they didn't know what to do. So, and that, you know, that's one of the many problems of a dictatorship. But yeah, so just, you know, his, yeah, how this whole country, not the whole country, but a lot of the country just kind of bought into his BS, and, you know, it's, that happens a lot. It happens a lot, so more than we would care to admit. So, yeah, it's, I just think it's incredible, this movie, not the, not what happened. yeah, and, what else was I going to say? Maybe that's it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I could talk about this movie for hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. But yeah.
Yeah, it's a great film. A couple little spark notes here. I know we were going to do Devondre Campbell and Bill Belichick at UNC. I'm honestly so tired from those two Monday night games, I'd rather just save it for next week. So we're going to do that. Because those two Monday night games were so bad. I don't feel great talking about football when those games were that bad.
Yeah, Bill. Well, what are you doing? Done.
Yeah, pretty much. And probably same for Devondre Campbell as well. But we'll get those more in depth later in the week. This is our last show for this week. We'll be back on Sunday because I want to do Thursday. I want to do Saturday's games. I want to do some college football playoff. So we'll consolidate those into Sunday next week. So we'll see you guys then.
Take care, everyone.
Yep, sounds good. Take care, everybody.